Hello and welcome back to the Legal Queen podcast. I release these episodes each Monday evening at 6 p.m. We have 11,000 monthly listeners, so I hope that you enjoy as we try to help those that have a family law question or query by giving as much information as we possibly can. If I could ask that if you enjoy this podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating so that we can help even more people. My goal is to reach a total of 50,000 monthly listeners by the end of this year, and you guys can help me do that. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. I hope you enjoy. I want to tell you about something really exciting that we're going to do this week. So for those of you, not all of you, but some of you may have seen that I put a story out on Instagram earlier. And what I said was, if people wanted to ask me a question, then they could leave their name and their phone number. And what I wanted to do was to give them a call through the show. So I've had a lot of people message me and say, absolutely. Now, I've pre-screened everybody, so I called them all before we go live on the show. But I thought it would be really interesting to just do something a little bit different. So I'm going to call somebody that I've just called. Now, let me bear with me. I'm going to call Natalie. So Natalie had a question for me and she's fully aware that she's going to be live on the show. So let's see how this goes. Hello, is that Natalie?
Hi, speaking.
Hi, Natalie, it's Tracy. So I've given you a call. Obviously, we're live on the show. What's your question, Natalie?
My question is to do with a situation with a garden in our house.
Yes.
Husband and partner of 28 years left in May. I suspect he's living with the lady he left before.
Yeah.
Our house has had the mortgage for 12 years and we're both on the mortgage. However, yeah. I reside here with our three children. I'm also pregnant as well. I have the children 99% of the time. My question is, how do I protect myself really and give myself security of the house even though he's still on the mortgage?
Yeah.
I have took over all the payments of the mortgage and the bills, etc.
Sure.
But for instance, he will come in and still treat it like it's his house.
Got you.
I don't feel like I've got privacy.
Got you. So there's a couple of things I can tell you there, Natalie. The first thing that I'm going to ask you to do is most definitely think about having a one-off consultation. Okay, that's the first thing, because there may be other things that you're entitled to that you're not aware of at the moment. Okay. Now, when it comes to properties, a lot of people think, oh well, I can't get the mortgage in my own name, so we're going to have to sell, and that's not strictly true. What happens is we get what's called a mesher order. So it's where you can remain in the property until your youngest child, is at the age of 18 and your husband stays on the mortgage. So, you know, he signs over his legal and beneficial interest in the property, but it means that he can then, you can then stay there with the children till they're 18. So that's the first thing I would say. But there may also be entitlement to things like spousal maintenance. There may even be a pension share there. So that's why I say get yourself some advice. And a lot of people will just have that 1 hour and then they don't need us for anything else, okay? The second thing that I would say is, that if he has already moved out, and there's no legislation on this, but as a rule of thumb, if someone's been gone for 2 to 3 months and you know that they have somewhere else to live and they're safe and secure, you can actually change the locks. If they keep, you know, coming into the property uninvited or letting themselves in when it's not convenient to you, we're not saying that, you know, you don't own this house anymore. But what we're saying is, look, we've separated, so respect my privacy. And I get that it's your house, but you've moved out now. So, you know, and if they're not going to listen to that, just know that you can change the locks. It's fine.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's all right. Point. Brilliant. Well, I hope that helps. And thanks for giving me a message earlier, Natalie. All right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, bye. So there we go. Our first caller on the live show. That went really well. Okay, so I'm also going to be dipping in and out of TikTok and answering some of your questions there, because there's loads of questions coming through there. Hello to my mods as ever, Karen and Zoe. And I can see that there's a couple of people with their hands up in the lounge. Hello, is that Carney?
Yes.
Hey, Carney, it's Tracy. I think we spoke earlier. What's your question of me, Carney?
So, my question is, I've been in financial dispute back and forth with our lawyers. The ex-husband is dragging his feet in terms of answering or delaying, causing massive delays as well as costs. I've just discovered in terms of an email, we have a shared ownership property together.
Yes.
That he's basically unable to buy me out and he's just not willing to sell.
Yes.
What can I do? Because we've been separated since December 2018 and I've just been stuck in hostile conditions living under the same roof where it's now starting to really affect me as well as the children. And I just don't know how to get out of that property when I've pursued legal proceedings with doing the Form E, the exchange, and it's just been 3 years with no results.
So when you say you've started legal proceedings, have you started court action?
No.
So do that. Do that.
So can I just proceed by myself? Because obviously...
Absolutely, you can.
All my money, I've got no more money left. And
yes, you can. So how it works, Carney, is that the form that you need to start a financial application, which will give you an instant finish line, because we only have three hearings in a financial application, is a Form A, okay? The prerequisite is that the parties have at least attempted mediation. So, you know, you might want to just reach out to a mediator and say, look, I do need to get a form from you, the mediator, so that I can make my application. But essentially, yes, you can just make your application. It's absolutely fine. And you're going to tick on that Form A what it is that you're looking for. And if you're not sure, then, you know, just tick a few of the boxes. The boxes will be property transfer, maintenance, lump sum orders, pension share orders. And you might not be sure at this stage what it is that you're entitled to. So just tick them and then send it in. But I say that because to the others listening, you will oftentimes get an ex that just wants to drag their feet. That, you know, they want to put you through as much discomfort and pain as they possibly can. So just take them to court. You know, court action will give you a finish line.
How long is the process that going to be?
So three hearings, roughly 3 months between each hearing. So you're looking at about 9 months, I would say. You're looking at anywhere between nine to 12 months. But as I say, there is only three hearings. If you and him can't agree on the first and the second hearing, then the court's going to make a decision at the third one. So at least it gives you that finish line. And as you say, you know, oftentimes I have people come to me and they say, I've been negotiating with solicitors for 3 years. I've spent the best part of £50,000. I'm getting nowhere. And I think, well, you just got to go to court. I mean, if we can't resolve after 6 months or even a year, it's time to go to court because clearly something's not working, you know?
Yes, clearly. And I've actually got a C100 form for a mediator because... Yeah. He refused to give me consent to take him on holiday this year.
Yes.
And again, he sort of dragged his feet knowing holiday is coming near and I had to go without them.
Yes.
Am I able, because that is, I'm presuming that's a separate one. That's more to do with child dispute.
Yeah. So that will be heard on a different day, probably by a different judge completely. The children, the finances won't be heard together. So yes, that will be a different application.
Okay. So form... A.
Form A is what you need for the finances. Now, when you're completing it, it will say, have you been to see a mediator? So as I say, you're going to have to reach out to a mediator in the first instance because you're going to need a MIAMS form from them. But speak to them about that. They'll know exactly what it is you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right?
Perfect. Thank you so
Lovely.
Much.
Lovely. Thanks for the call, Carney. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, so next up on my list, so these are people that have direct messaged me on Instagram, knowing that they're going to be live on the show today and have let me have their number and a rough idea of their question. And I thought it would be a bit of fun to give them a call while we are live on Discord and on the TikTok. Hello, Jane, it's Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
You have a question for me, just reminding you that we are live on the show at the moment, Jane. How can I help?
As you probably have seen my question, I'm just going to quickly repeat it.
Yes, yeah, sure.
I was married for 3 months. I knew it's quite a short marriage. But we were together, all together, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And during our cohabitation period, we did buy our family home, which he did purchase cash by.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't invest any money out there. But I, of course, helped him to find the property and decorate the property as well.
Yeah.
And marriage did turn out very badly abusive. And I do have all the proof, of course, from the doctors.
Yeah.
However, the long story short is, at the moment, last 2 years, we're going through financial hearing. And all I'm seeking from the court that like a one bedroom flat deposit, I will take a mortgage on that. And he earns £10,000 after tax, and I earn only £2,100, like, you know, £2,100 after tax. And yes, and so far he has paid for my 2 years rent, because I had to move out. And also he did cover my legal fees that time, the lawyer I had it. So this is my question, that will the court will approve my request?
Your request to do what, Jane? I was following the story, but I've missed your actual request of the court. What was the request?
The request in court that, you know, to meet my needs, that, you know, to help me to at least a certain, we asked for a certain figure. I asked for a certain figure to help me to give me the certain deposit to buy, so I can buy a one bed flat, and as well as like, you know, a new car.
Yes.
I do need it for my health and furniture. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for that. So I'm going to be completely honest. It's difficult to answer that question, because when the court's looking at a request from one party as to what their needs are, they're also going to be looking at the other party and obviously what their needs are going to be. And then they're going to look at what's involved. You know, how much have we got here to divide between the two? So it's a difficult question to answer, Jane, without more information. If you haven't already, and I know I say this all the time, but please think about taking, even
Sorry,
if it's...
your line is breaking.
I was saying, if you haven't already, please think about taking just even a one-hour consultation, because actually it's really important that you understand not only what you're entitled to, but have an appreciation of what the other side are entitled to as well, because that's going to help manage your expectations. Have you managed to have any legal advice yet?
I do have, like, you know, our legal, I did have it. But the thing is, we do have our Form E. He does have almost 3 million pensions, which we are not seeking.
Right.
I'm not seeking, as well as the house oath is 1.3 million. All I am seeking, like, £300,000, gonna be honest.
Yeah. But again, Jane, it's still impossible for me to answer, simply because... You know, I don't know what else is involved. You say that the house is worth that, but I don't know what other debts might be, you know, in the marriage.
There is no debt. The house doesn't have any mortgage to catch by.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to push me for an answer, what I would say is, if you have 1.3 million of equity in a property and it's been a long marriage and you're asking for 300,000, there's every chance the court's going to say yes. But please don't quote me on that, because there's an awful lot else that needs to be considered, which is why I'm saying I think you probably need some legal advice. All right?
I understand. It was only 3 months marriage, and we were together only for, like, you know, all together 2.5 years.
Then you might struggle. See, that's another factor then that might change things. So you might struggle on that then, because that's not a very long marriage at all.
And do the court will consider the cohabitation period?
They will, but it's still a very short relationship.
Okay, so you think that 300K would be quite a hard then?
No, no, no. What I think is that you need to get some legal advice, because do you see where you threw in something else there at the end? And obviously my suggestion to you then changed, but there might be something else that I don't know about. Do you know what I mean? So you definitely need to get some legal advice. And look, don't feel that if you speak to a solicitor, you have to then engage them. It can just be a one-off appointment.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
That sounds good to me.
Lovely.
Yeah, all right.
Well, thanks, Jane. Thanks for sharing that. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so we're going to move on to our next caller, who is John. I will get onto the Discord, guys, but this is just something we thought we would try this week. Hi again to everyone on the TikTok.
Hello.
Hello, John. It's Tracy again. How are you?
Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
Fine, thank you. Fine, thank you.
Right, what's your question, John?
Right, probably best a bit of history on this, a bit of background information.
Okay.
I separated from my wife a year gone April. And, you know, this year I've instigated sort of DIY divorce proceedings, done it myself through the court. Now, we bought a house 14 years ago.
Yeah.
We've been married sort of 10 years. Unfortunately, at the time, I couldn't go onto the mortgage. However, I have paid the mortgage ever since. And she put her daughter on the mortgage just to make the eligibility criteria with the bank.
Yeah.
The daughter never lived in the house. Now, I'm an avid follower of you, obviously, since that point. And I have put a home's rights notice on the property.
Yes.
But it's coming to the point, I mean, the divorce is going to be finalised on the 8th of October, but it's come to the point now I need to get the financial order set in place or a consent order.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what would be a fair division of assets based on the fact that she's living in the house now, I'm not. I have a pension. There was no contributions made during the relationship with my wife, with that pension. So I believe, from what you've said before, that that could be ring-fenced.
Yes.
However, the mortgage will be sort of paid off in 3 years, so she's potentially sitting on probably about £130,000 equity of house, with my pension being worth about probably £170,000-£180,000 at the moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously I'm going to go and see a solicitor, but I was just asking advice of what you thought a court would deem a fair division of assets.
So how long is the relationship, John? The marriage and, well, and if you were living together as well?
Yeah, we were living together before, so probably 17, married for 10 years, well, married 11 years, together for probably 17.
Okay, so 17 years is definitely a long relationship. And the reason that I always ask that question first is because that gives us our starting point. And in that case, it's going to be 50-50. Okay, so after 17 years, the court's going to come at this and literally cut it right down the middle. Now, what we can then look to do is, if we feel that we need more than 50%, we start looking at other factors, okay? So we start looking at the age of the parties. Where we've got one that is significantly older than the other and therefore has less time to work, they might get more than 50%. Yeah. Where we have maybe medical conditions, if somebody is not able to work, they can get more than 50%. If one of the parties is the main carer of the children and therefore that inhibits their ability to work or even work part-time or full-time, they can get more than 50%. And on it goes. Yeah. So, you know, what I would say to you is, look to achieving 50%. But then when you take the advice...
Would that be 50% of my pension and 50%?
So if the pension was a premarital asset or a pre-relationship asset, so as long as you can say, hand on heart, you haven't made any contributions to that pension in the last 17 years, then you should be able to ring fence that, okay? So that should be okay. But that's probably where any ring fencing is going to stop. What I mean by that is, sometimes people bring a property, like a rental property, into the relationship. So the parties have never lived in it, and it's been rented out the whole time. And we do try and ring fence things like that. But, you know, if it's 17 years, then the answer is going to be no. That will definitely be brought into it, you know. But that pension, if there's no contributions made, you should be okay protecting that. But the rest of it, you're going to be looking at a starting point anyway, John, of 50-50.
50-50, right.
Now, the other thing to think about when you see the solicitor is, obviously, make sure that you talk about spousal maintenance. because I don't know what you're earning, what she's earning. I'm not asking you to share that with us, but I'm just saying it may be that her side decide to come after you for spousal maintenance. And you know, my view is always be prepared. Always know not just what you're entitled to, but what the other side are entitled to as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that might happen, but anyway, we'll see. So right, okay.
So,
yeah, because she's sort of 64, basically. She's got 3 years left. I've got 6 years left. So that, obviously that'll come into the equation as well.
Well, it will, but that's not a huge age difference, if I'm being perfectly honest. That's not massive.
No.
So, you know, I was thinking more when we've got like 10 or 15 years between the parties. You know, sometimes I have one couple that's, one party that's 45 and the other party that's 60. Do you know what I mean? Then it's sort of taken into account. Reach out and you know, you can have a chat with us or another solicitor of your choice, whoever, John, but take that one off advice. And as I say, always remember to ask, what can the other party ask of me? What is it that they could be asking, you know, getting from me? Because that's important to know as well.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, I'll probably be in touch then shortly.
Lovely. All right then, John. Well, thank you so much for sharing
thanks
that.
Thanks for having me on anyway.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks,
thanks for me on.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
So there we go. I hope John's story has, resonated with some of you. It's really good of people to agree to being phoned up. Okay, so I've got one final caller from the Instagram story that I put up. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Is that Amy?
It is, yes.
Hello, Amy. It's Tracy. I spoke to you earlier.
Yes, hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
That's okay. You had a question for me. How can I help?
Yeah, I wonder if you can help. So I'm going through a divorce at the moment. It is in court and the finances, we haven't had a first hearing or anything yet.
Yeah.
But my ex is saying that he should be able to have use of my car. He has our children.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering kind of where I stand with that.
Well, it depends, I suppose, who needs the car more. You know, if you need the car to ferry the children to and from school and after school activities, etc., and you're therefore using the car multiple times during the day, doing a food shop or whatever else you might be needing it for, then that might sort of trump if he only needs the car to get backwards and forwards from work. Do you know what I mean? So if I were acting for you, I'd be saying, well, who needs the car more? Because logically, the court's going to say, well, until we get this finances sorted, maybe leave it with mum. Or maybe actually we need to give it to dad, because if he can't get to work, then we don't have any money coming in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, he does have another form of transport, but he's saying he wants to be using my car because it's bigger and it's suitable. But I need the vehicles for myself to get to work, to go and collect the children and things like that.
And Amy, is the matter before the court at the moment or not?
So we're doing the finances at the moment.
And is it in court?
We've done all our Form E.
Okay.
But we haven't had kind of like our hearing yet.
So, but if you've done your Form E's, that will be coming up soon. Because what I was going to suggest is at that first hearing, you can ask the court for direction. You know, normally the first hearings are just some directions about, you know, filing questionnaires or replies to questionnaires and getting the house valued and filing further updating disclosure, etc. But what you can do is say to the judge, look, I know it seems small, but we've just got this big dispute about the car. I'd be really grateful if actually the court could give a direction that I keep the car. Do you know what I mean? And just ask the court for a direction on it, a steer on it. Court won't make an order, but the court will hear a logical argument and make a suggestion and might say to him, look, you know, you've got another form of transport. She doesn't, you know, until the next hearing, let's her keep the car for now. Do you know what I mean? So you can...
So it makes no difference that it was purchased or with my money and in my name. That makes no...
Well, I mean, the fact that it's in your name means that you are the legal owner of it. So, yeah, I mean, he's got that obstacle to get over. Not only does he want the car, but he wants an asset that belongs to you. And, of course, now that we're in, you know, financial remedy proceedings, then, you know, it's not all up for grabs anymore like it was when you were married. So I think that would go for you as well. Mention that to the judge. Say, look, car's in my name. It's a constant dispute. It's letters backwards and forwards. There's no need for it. Can we have a direction? Car stays in my possession until such times as we get the final order from the court. It just deals with it, doesn't it? You know, otherwise it's just one of those niggling things that keep, you know, rearing its ugly head throughout the proceedings.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else I could help you with, Amy?
No, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you for sharing. I do appreciate that. Okay, take care.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm going to go to the forum now and take some questions from there, and then I'll bob back to the Discord stage, because now I've got a couple of hands up there, and I'm fully aware that we're on TikTok as well. Lots of questions coming through there. So one of the questions on the divorce forum that I'm looking at is titled Barrister and Final Hearing. 30-year relationship, 22 years married. So straight away, this is a long relationship. Three different barristers over the 3 years. FDRs cancelled due to complete lack of disclosure. Final hearings booked in October. I now have to choose another new barrister. How do I know who is any good? Well, you'd be taking suggestions from your solicitor, because as solicitors, we're dealing with barristers all the time. And it's really important when I'm advising my clients as to which barrister that they select, what their case is about. So do I need a really aggressive barrister on this one? Do I need a barrister actually that, so long as they are fair but firm, then that will suffice? Does my client have a budget? You know, because barristers can range from £1,000 all the way up to £15,000 for a day. Do you know what I mean? Depending, of course, on their experience and what they're doing. So lots of questions that you need to consider. Now, if you don't have a solicitor, then all you can do is visit the barrister's chambers online. So all barristers will belong to a set of chambers, okay? So visit them on their online website, if you like, and have a read-up about their profile. You can have a read-up of the cases that they've won, cases that they've settled, where their expertise lies. And you can then just give them a call and find out from their clerk how much they are going to cost you, okay? So I hope that's helped. Another question here on the forum, decree absolute over 12 months after decree nisi, reasoning why it's taken so long. I've searched on here for an answer but couldn't find an answer. So my divorce has taken 4 years to finally get to the point of a decree absolute application. As it's taken so long, I understand that I need to send an additional letter to explain why. Absolutely, you do need to send. It's a statement more than anything. What the court want to be sure of is that you guys haven't lived together since you have applied for your divorce, and that you haven't had any other children together. And they will always ask for a statement if it's been 12 months since you have made an application for the petition. And since your decree nisi. And of course, in this instance, it has. It's been over 4 years. So let the court know we haven't lived together. We haven't had any further children together, and we've been sorting out the finances. OK, so I'm going to take one more from the divorce forum, which is simply entitled House. Love these kinds of questions. It's all bullet pointed for me. Married 2016, separated 2017, divorced 2024, moved out 2018, bought my own home with new partner in 22. Does my ex have any rights to the house? Love a question like that. And my good friend Missy, I can see, has given her insight, her input to that question. So thank you, Missy. So yes, he does, or she does. Know, guys, that until you have that final order in divorce or your decree absolute, you are still married. And therefore, we can argue it's a post-separation asset, but that doesn't guarantee that it will not be included in the financial settlement. Okay, so just be aware of that. Right, let me come into the lounge. Hello, everyone. Hope everyone's well. I'm going to go to the first hand up, which is Captain. So, Captain, whenever you are ready, you can join me on the stage and ask me your question. After Captain Paige, I'm going to come to you because you have your hand up. Paige, you got there first. How is it I can help, Paige?
Hello there. I've tried to take some notes. I've done it short and sweet.
Okay.
Okay, so it's a family matter, involving one child with a court order in place every other weekend and 50-50 split holiday. Previous domestic abuse relationship, we split over 8 years ago.
Yeah.
The only communication I have with him is via email, as it's very toxic.
Yeah.
Now, father doesn't to the court order. He doesn't phone child. He cancels contact within 24 hours, which affects my working commitments, or he doesn't turn up. Generally, he does his every other weekend, but that's about it. I had welfare concerns before the court order and even after the court order was placed. Just some examples, he's sharing a bed with his grandparent at a rundown motel as father doesn't have appropriate accommodation. He shares his dad's toothbrush. He doesn't wash for a whole week. No change of clothes. It's only been recently that an ex-partner has confided in me privately and made me aware of the lack of care our child has been experiencing. She's had to buy him the basic essentials as the father refuses to buy stuff. He has severe anger issues, controlling behaviour, and he's also taking steroids, which I knew anyway from the relationship, but she said with the steroids he's out of control. He's never physically harmed our child, and I do believe he loves him dearly, but he's just not fit to parent.
Okay.
They split within a month, and he's now with someone else. My child has already met this person and gone to a house. I know that's out of my control. I'm not intentionally trying to stop a relationship between child and father. However, I'm concerned about his welfare and the detrimental effect it's going to have with his care. I feel that overnight stays are not acceptable until something is sorted.
Yeah.
My child loves him to pieces, but he's craving the attention he's not getting.
And I think, now, Paige, go on, sorry, what's your question?
The question was, do I take this back to court? Would I be penalised if I stop contact or perhaps allow phone calls instead until this is sorted?
So I think where you have a welfare concern, and clearly you do, then, you know, something needs to be done, okay? You mentioned the alienation word. This definitely isn't alienation, because alienation is where, you know, typically the child isn't seeing the other parent, and in this instance, your child is. You know, you do recognise that he loves to spend time with his dad and that you want to encourage that relationship. So that's a big tick for you in the first instance. However, there does have to be somebody looking out for the child. So do you have to take it back to court? It wouldn't be in your interest to take it back to court. You can do one of two things. You can exercise your parental responsibility if, and I say if, because you mentioned to me that there's been domestic violence and that this guy's on steroids. So I don't want to encourage you to put yourself in front of danger. But you could say to him, look, these are my concerns. It's not up for debate. You know, there's a lot there that's missing in the overnight contact. And moving forward, I'm only agreeable to daytime contact. Now, what typically happens is that the minute you start to breach the order, dad will take it back to court. So it means that you don't have to. However, if option B is that dad says, yeah, whatever, we're going to stick to the order. I'm keeping him overnight. I'm not going to return him. Then you would take the order back to court. But if you take it back to court, you have to raise the welfare concerns. If dad takes it back, it's a breach of an order, okay? But if you take it back, you're saying the reason that I'm stopping contact is because I have welfare concerns, and you'd have to list them, okay? Now, be very careful in how you present your case. Because as awful as this sounds, like not washing a child or sharing a toothbrush or sharing the same bed isn't always seen by every judge as a welfare concern. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes the bar is a little bit lower. You know, if a child is experiencing neglect, not being fed, is being left on their own, is cold, you know, is being put in the direct path of danger, so to speak. So make sure, and I'm not saying that you haven't got a case paid, you definitely have, but make sure that when you, if you do have to make that court order, that you're presenting those facts well.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not being picky or anything. It's just this has been ongoing for over a year since the contacts order was done.
Yes.
It's not getting any better. I can't communicate with him. It just threatens me. It's just a sad situation.
Yeah, it is a sad. But the court will listen to you. The court will listen to you. And, you know, and if the court agree with you, then, you know, they may order that dad go on a parenting course or that actually overnight contact simply stop. But you've got nothing to lose by making the order. And in the meantime, while you're waiting for that hearing date to come about, you can say to dad and do it, evidence it by emails and things. Look, happy for daytime contact to continue. More than happy for that to keep going. All right.
Okay.
All right,
so
lovely.
So offer daytime contact, express my concerns to him.
Yeah.
If he refuses to bring the child back, then I would take it to court.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah. All right.
Okay, fine,
lovely. Okay. Thanks, Paige. Good luck.
Thanks,
bye.
Bye.
Captain, you are next up. How can I help?
Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
I've got a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, okay.
So the first one is, could you please advise on the best way to present evidence at a final child hearing?
I don't know if there's a best way. The statement is the most common way. So the judge will give permission to both parties to file a statement outlining their position. It might also ask them to respond to the CAFCAS recommendations or the social services report. So you want to do it by way of a statement. You want to attach as many relevant exhibits as you possibly can. You want to make sure that you keep it concise and to the point and not be rambling on and giving the court chapter and verse, because the judges simply won't read it. They don't have the time to read it. So I would work on crafting a really good statement would be my answer to that.
Thanks, Tracy. My brother and I purchased a property as tenants in common in equal shares.
Yes.
There is no mortgage on the property. It was intended for an investment purpose.
Yes.
The property was purchased before I got married. 10 years later, my partner and I moved in after we had twins and rented the property and paid full rent. We are now separated. Will he be able to make a claim on my share of the property should we divorce?
Yes. It's as simple as that. Yes, he will. The 50% share that she owns is an asset. It's now become a marital asset. It then became the former matrimonial home. So yes, absolutely, he can make a claim against her 50%. Now, I'm not saying he'll succeed, but that wasn't the question. The question was, can he claim? And my answer is yes.
Yeah. Even though they became tenants in the property rather than actually...
Yeah, but she owns it. She can't rent it from herself. She's not a tenant and an owner. She's an owner of that, of her 50%. So they may have been paying the brother rent, but yeah, that's an unsuccessful loophole that she's trying to argue there. She owns 50% of it. That 50% will be an asset.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tracy.
Lovely.
That's all I've got for now.
Okay. Thanks, Captain. Div 1234, I'm going to come to you next. What's your question?
Yeah, hiya. So we've been married for 18 years and then he applied for divorce last year. So court has already granted us conditional order. And then we wanted to go through the mediation for the finances, but it has failed. So he's applying for court order for the finances.
Yep.
In the meantime, he changed his will like recently this week, and then he removed me on the will so that he removed me on all the assets and something like that. Like if it goes to court, it will take at least 9 months, you mentioned before, right?
Yes.
And if something happens in the meantime, Will I not get a share of the pension or anything like that? All the finances.
Yeah. So this is probably this is probably a better question for a will solicitor. It is common when parties start a divorce, the first thing we will advise them to do is to make separate wills. Okay. Because if you hold something. That, you know, and you die during the divorce process, you actually want your share to go to your beneficiaries. However, it gets a little bit complicated because if he dies and he is still married to you, then as his wife, you can contest his will because you are still legally his wife. Okay. Now, that's where my knowledge on that sort of stops, because then we're going off down a wills question and a probate question. Okay. So what I can tell you is he can do that. He can change his will. But what I do know, as his wife, you can contest that will if he dies when you are still married. Okay? So your next question might be, what would be my chances of success? And that's where you need to speak to a solicitor who does wills. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's lovely. Fine. Yeah, he's giving everything to our kids. I've got two kids, 17 and 10.
Yes.
And 90% is giving to his kids anyway. So, and then 10% he's going given to his brother. So
got you.
I just wanted to know, is it good for me to like sort out the finances before, or because my parents are advising just drag it out kind of thing, like take him to, it's okay because he's earning more than me, he's like his salary is double my salary, so you may get good agreement if you go to court kind of thing.
Look, it's a personal it's a personal decision.
Like that,
yeah, so. It's definitely a personal decision, and I can't advise you whether to go ahead or whether to drag whether to drag it out. What I would say though is that if we just take a step back for a minute and forget the legalities involved in all this, if a person has made the decision that they want to end their marriage and they want to sever the financial ties and move on, emotionally, that's the right thing to do. So, you know, and I say that because there are people that make the decision to drag it out and not deal with it. And I think all that happens there, particularly when there's children involved, is that you can elongate that emotional pain. So it's a personal decision, Div. It's completely up to you. My suggestion would be deal with it, sort it, and move on.
Okay, thank you. Thank
all
you
right,
so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. Bye. Yuo, I'm going to come to you next. What's your question? Take yourself off mute. Ask me your question.
Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
We took my partner's ex-partner to court in November 2023 to get a child arrangements order in place.
Yes.
The information on the order was never correct, and since November, we've constantly chased for it to be updated. So it was supposed to stipulate the child's surname can't be changed. A permanent act was supposed to be sent, but that was never received. We're having issues with the other parents telling the child that visits haven't happened because your dad won't come and get you, which isn't true. The mother's asked for the date to be changed or cancelled.
Yeah.
The child's being told to call the step-parent dad, but the child doesn't know why. They're cancelling calls and then saying, I told you this at drop-off, which could be eliminated if there was a parenting app in place, but we don't have that.
Yeah.
Kafka's never spoke to the child ahead of the original order, which we were told was going to happen, but it didn't. We've just got some general concerns about the cleanliness, the fact that the child's saying she doesn't shower regularly. It's every 4 to 5 days. We've taught her how to do that when she's been with us, but since she goes back home, she says she's not allowed to do that, and the parent and the step-parent are doing that for her, which she doesn't want them to do. We're a bit at a loss, as it's not really enough to take back to court, but it's just a lot of different issues that seem to be adding up. And I don't know what, no, we're not supposed to have advice, but what you would suggest.
Yeah.
Or just keep documenting things. And
so, I think some of what you've said should have been dealt with at the final hearing. So the fact that Kafkas said they'd spoken to the child when they hadn't and things. So I think some of it may not be able to be rectified by bringing the matter back to court without opening up the whole case again. And the court may not be willing to do that. But I do think, Mandy, where there's changes needed because it doesn't accurately reflect what was agreed or what was ordered back in November, that's definitely a good reason to return the matter to court. Because I think that anything that is ordered in court is felt necessary, not only for the children, but to assist the parents in co-parenting. So, you know, if we're leaving off bits, whoever's drafted it has just forgotten, whoever's checked it hasn't picked up that we've left bits out, whatever the situation was, it really doesn't matter. But I think for that reason, you should return it to court. Typically, what we would do as lawyers, we would send the order back to court and ask that it be amended under the slip rule. Which is basically a fancy way of saying to the judge, you forgot to add this in, could you please add it in? But I think because significant time has passed now, you may have to actually take it back to have the court, to have the order amended. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we did chase it several times through the year and they just never come back to us. Yeah. So they say it's going to be amended and they don't do it. And the real concern is the surname, because they've already changed the surname of the other child that isn't my partner's child.
Right.
So I would be very surprised if they're not looking to do that. So they've all got the same surname.
And that's really important.
It's just little things like lying about that your dad won't pick you up. That's not true. And it's trying to make sure that's documented rather than her saying, well, I told you that and she really hasn't done that.
Yeah, I mean, when you say documented, you mean documented in the order?
No, the agreement was that a parenting app was going to be sent because of the mother just not staying in contact and not doing what they say they're going to do. But she's cancelling visits and then saying, well, I told you that when we did the job.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I hope that if we had a parenting app, we could at least have it documented if we do need to go back. I see.
Yeah, definitely.
As soon as my partner replies and says she didn't say that, she then doesn't reply.
Yes, absolutely. So there's an element of control there by the sounds of it. I mean, I would definitely be, when you return it to the court, use that opportunity to let the court know that there has been issues experienced with the other parent's behaviour, and could we have some consequences put in the order for any further breaches by way of a penal notice? Because I suspect that your order at the moment doesn't have that. And that can sometimes...
No, it doesn't.
So that can sometimes help a co-parenting relationship where you've got one parent who maybe doesn't really give a damn about the order and will flout and break the rules and really doesn't care what the consequences are. It's usually because there are no consequences. Whereas if we have a penal notice attached, and a penal notice can mean a fine, community service, in really severe cases, it can mean a short term of imprisonment. So it's always worth having that, because sometimes it just, you know, it holds the other parent accountable for their actions and makes them think twice before maybe cancelling contact or, you know. The other thing I would say, and I say it not only for your benefit, but for those that are listening, where you have a parent that is maybe criticising the, you know, your partner or maybe, you know, brainwashing the kids, don't jump in on that bandwagon. Okay, don't try to prove we didn't say that, we didn't do that, your mom's lying, don't do that. Okay, always remain neutral. Listen to the child, but don't get involved. Because typically, if you start to do that or your partner starts to do it, you also become a parent that is being alienating or disrespectful. Do you know what I mean? So as hard as it is, and as I say, I'm not saying you're doing it, I'm just saying it for the benefit of everyone else that's listening, remain neutral.
Yeah, well, the child has already come over to us and said that the step parent calls their dad an idiot and talks about the other children. So we just say that's, you know, that's not kind to speak about people that way, and we just kind of leave it there. But it helps to build a picture of what kind of people we're dealing with, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
it's just difficult.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much, Tracy. That's been really, really helpful.
All right then. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Mandy, I'm going to come to you next. You are waiting. Whenever you're ready, what's your question?
Hello. Sorry.
That's okay.
Right, hi, Tracy. Thanks for taking my question.
That's okay.
What it is, I have a 9-year-old with ADHD. Obviously, he's under hospitals and school.
Yeah.
You know, EHCPs and stuff. He hasn't had any contact with his dad since February 22.
Yeah.
His father is an alcoholic. He's not a very nice person at all. My son wants absolutely nothing to do with him. If you mention his dad, the attitude and the answer you get is not very polite.
Okay.
Is there any way the courts would force him to have contact with his dad, even though school, hospitals, etc., have all got him down as a safeguarding issue?
How old is he, Mandy, your son?
Nine.
Okay. So I think at nine, probably a little bit young to have his views listened to, but given that he hasn't seen him since February 22, given that you have a lot of evidence to support your concerns, your welfare concerns, and given that Dad is an alcoholic, I suspect that Dad will really struggle on this one. And to answer your question, if Dad made the application, would the court make you force your son? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think that there would be an expectation on, because let's say that Dad makes the application, Mandy. The first thing you want to let the court know of is that Dad's an alcoholic and that you are looking for Dad to submit hair strand drug testing. Okay. The second thing is that you're going to be asking the court for permission to submit all this other evidence you have from social services, medical, etc., to say that there's welfare concerns. And I think where you have an overwhelming case like that, the court would think twice before maybe ordering unsupervised contact or something like that. They're going to have to recognise it's been a long time since contact's taken place, and that at nine, you know, there might be some emotional damage if the child was then asked to start seeing Dad. So I don't think you've got too much to worry about.
Okay, then. Thank you ever so much for answering my question. It's very much
appreciated. Thanks, Mandy. You. Bye-bye. Next, what's your question?
One quick one I've had, and I think it might help a lot of other people. Can I actually represent myself in court if I've run out of money with the lawyers, or will the court ask me to get representation for any pension sharing order or house split?
So the court can sometimes suggest to you, you know, your matter's complex. Hello and welcome back to the Legal Queen podcast. I release these episodes each Monday evening to get a lawyer. No, we have 11,000 monthly listeners, so I hope that you enjoy as we try to help those that have a family law question or query by giving as much information as we possibly can. If you, if I could ask that if you enjoy this podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating so that we can help even more people. That solicitor is to reach a total of 50,000 pension shares by the end of this year, and you guys can help me do that. So a lot of times, anyway, let's get on with the episode. I hope you enjoy. And the applicant is representing themselves. The judge will look for those of you listening on the podcast. I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. And don't forget, guys, if you can give me a 5-star review, if you think it's worthy of one, that would really help us increase our monthly lawyer to do it, and therefore help more and more people.
You've got no lawyers involved, then the court will just ask the applicant to do their best. Essentially, and do what they can. But they can't force you to get a lawyer, and you can represent yourself, yes.
Yeah, and just on the back of that, because a lot of people have been asking, so the term lawyer, solicitor and barrister, can you explain the difference between all of them?
And I use lawyer and solicitor interchangeably. Lawyer is, I suppose, an American term. In America, they don't have solicitors and barristers. Solicitors do all of the advocacy as well. So they'll do all of the court work. And that's why they're referred to as lawyers. So they're in the office and they'll go to court with you. In England, we have a slightly more traditional system. So we have solicitors and we have barristers. Barristers will only ever go to court with you. You don't make an appointment to go and see a barrister at their office. They meet you at court, they represent you at court. The solicitors are the ones that do the paperwork, make the applications, take your instructions, give you advice, but generally pass you to the barrister at the court door. Do you know what I mean? Unless it's a real simple case, then we will do court work. But where it's complicated, we'll pull upon the expertise of a barrister. Where I use the word lawyer, I generally mean solicitor. That's what I'm referring to.
That's all I've got, Trish.
Lovely. Thanks. Greg, you are up next. What's your question?
So I'm going for the family court. C100 application.
Yes.
And for children to live with me.
Yes.
And I'm planning to relocate back to Poland.
Yes.
But my question is, when I should be asking the court for the relocation order? Is that separate application, or I can ask the court during our child arrangement order?
No, Greg. So the court's only going to make a finding on an application that's in front of it. So if you haven't made an application for a relocation order yet, you need to do it. And you'll do it on a C2 form, okay? So because you're already in proceedings, download the C2 and make another application. It will be heard at the same time as your existing application, and there won't be a court fee. But strictly speaking, the court can't make an order unless it's been asked to make an order. And the way you ask the court to make an order is to make the application. All right?
Okay, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Greg. Bye. Adam, you are up next. Whenever you're ready, ask me your question.
I've got court on the 3rd of September.
Yes.
Like a final adoption or proceeding for my son.
Yes.
But I have to file a statement on why I don't want the adoption to go ahead.
Yes.
Like how would I go ahead with that?
You mean how would you do the statement, Adam?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're gonna need, I take it you don't have a solicitor, no? Do you have a solicitor, Adam?
No, not at the moment, no.
Okay, so what you're asking me, I think, is how do you do the statement yourself? You're just going to need to sit down and make a list of reasons as to why you don't think the children being adopted is in their best interests. Okay? Because obviously, if the children are adopted, it means that you're going to lose your parental responsibility, and so is mum. So neither of you will have any parental responsibility over the children anymore. So you need to write down why you feel that's a wrong decision. So you need to write down what would be the disadvantages of the children being adopted and what would be the advantages of the children remaining with you or their mum, whichever the case may be. And you need to send that. Yeah, go on. Go on.
I'm sorry. I prefer the child to be with me because the mum is like on like drugs and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I don't obviously trust little in being with the mum.
Yeah. So then you put that in your statement. You give the disadvantages to the adoption going ahead and why that's not in the child's best interests. You give the disadvantages to the child staying with mum and say why you don't think the child should be with mum, and you'd list some reasons there. And then you're going to really showcase the benefits of the child being with you and talk about all the benefits and the positives to the child living with you and what you're doing and where you live and what you're going to feed the child and how you're going to have a nice home environment for the child and you're going to make education a priority. You're fully aware of keeping a child fed and clothed and warm, etc., etc. And really just go to town with showcasing your parenting ability and then send it into court.
I am a first-time dad.
Okay. So I've recently actually, Adam, done a YouTube video on I've done a YouTube video on how fathers can best represent themselves in a child case. And if you go to my YouTube channel, that's actually going to go out this Thursday at 6. So take a look at that. And I give, I think, you know, 5 or 6 suggestions of what it is you need to do as a father representing yourself in a children's matter. So take a look at that Thursday on my YouTube channel, Legal Queen.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks, perfect. Adam.
And what's the name on it again? Sorry.
Oh, it's just the Legal Queen.
Okay. Yeah. That's perfect. Thank Lovely. You very much.
Pleasure. Thank you. All the best. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Well, what a show we had today, guys. It's 1:30. Thank you. I know that some of my moderators need to dash back to work. I'm hoping that you're still there, Zoe and Karen, to say thank you so much for that, because I know that you dash back at 1:30 for helping me out on the TikTok there. What a show. That was incredible. We had some live callers. We took some questions on the forum. And we also had some hands up in the audience. Apologies to those of you still with your hand up. But remember, I'm back on Friday, 12:30 to 1:30. Also know that this show is recorded and will go out on Tea with the Queen Monday, which is another YouTube channel that I run, Monday at 6. And also we'll take the audio and we'll put it on the Spotify, on the podcast. So guys, I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to be back on Friday to help some more of you with your family law questions. So until then, take care. And I look forward to speaking to you on Friday. Bye-bye. For those of you listening on the podcast, I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. And don't forget, guys, if you can give me a 5-star review, if you think it's worthy of one, that would really help us increase our monthly listeners and therefore help more and more people. Thanks again.